Welcome to this 19-part series of Business Podcasts by David Maister, exploring the key principles and practices found in his new book, Strategy and the Fat Smoker.
Hello, I'm David Maister. In this series of podcasts, I'm proud to present a special 19-part series of the audiobook version of my new book, Strategy and the Fat Smoker. If you're interested in purchasing a copy of the book in hardback, it is now available from both Amazon.com and at my website at davidmaister.com/store. Chapter 4. Are We in This Together? The Preconditions for Strategy. If getting on and sticking with an ambitious program of self-improvement is hard for an individual, the challenge for an organization is immensely greater. How certain is the organization that everyone involved is ready to go on the same journey together, making the same sacrifices to attain the same future goals? Especially in these days of mobility and talent shortages, where members of the organization at all levels must be treated essentially as volunteers, the first order of business in doing strategy is confirming that people want to go somewhere together. Managers build their plans and strategies on the assumption that people in their firm are ready and willing to be team players, acting collectively, to create or achieve something in the future. The truth, however, is that these attitudes cannot be assumed to exist. In fact, they're notably scarce. In many firms, perhaps even most, these preconditions for strategy may not exist. It's hard to identify and create buy-in for what we, the firm, should do if there's no strong sense of we, a mutual commitment and sense of group loyalty and cohesiveness. Similarly, talk of new initiatives can be meaningless if the members of the firm are not committed to embark on a journey together into the future. This was brought home to me when I was facilitating a strategy discussion in an industry that has a long tradition of hiring, celebrating, and rewarding stars, individualistic solo operators. As we discussed the investments and initiatives necessary to implement the strategy identified by management, one of the players in the room asked, "Why would I want to do this? What's in it for me?" It must be immediately recognized that having this thought is normal. The industry I was working with at that time is only unusual in the refreshing willingness of people in that business to actually say things like that out loud. In other industries and professions, they just think it all the time without actually saying it. As we worked through the issues, it became increasingly clear that there were major differences among the people in the room, the key players in the company whose participation and collaboration would be essential to pull off any strategy. The issue was not the specifics of the proposed strategy. What came through clearly was that no commitment to each other or to their joint future existed. In this situation, and on other occasions when I have explored this, it has become clear that people differ on their desire to be engaged in a joint mutually dependent enterprise, collaboration, and the time frame they want to apply to their decision-making, future orientation. These differences are either inherent personality characteristics or at least strongly held preferences. Some people prefer working as part of a team with joint accountabilities, responsibilities, and rewards. They want to be part of something. Others, however, freely admit that they are most comfortable and seek out situations where they can be independent, judged on their own individual merits and accomplishments without being tied to the performance of others. The other major difference between people is their time frame. Some people have an appetite for high investment, future-oriented strategies. They are willing to defer, if necessary, some immediate gratification, including income, in order to invest to get the chance to reap higher rewards in the future. Others are reluctant to invest, even in their own future. They prefer to focus on winning today, letting tomorrow take care of itself. Combining these two dimensions leads to the identification of four kinds of preferences that individuals and companies have. Type 1 is the solo operator who values independence and wants to make little investment in the future. He or she is willing to bet on the ability to catch fresh meat each and every day. I call this the mountain lion approach. Pay me for the bacon I bring back today or this year. Type 2 is the individual who prefers to act in coordination with others but doesn't like to invest or defer gratification too much.
I call these people collectively the wolf pack. If we can act together, they say, we can kill bigger animals, but I'd better eat well too, or I'm joining another pack. Types 1 and 2 may be unwilling to invest or bet on the future for a variety of reasons, including risk aversion. Type 3 is the individual who wants to be independent but is interested in building for the future by investing time and resources to get somewhere new. I call such people spiders who patiently weave their web to catch more flies in the future, or perhaps beavers who build dams to provide a home for their own family. Type 4 is the individual who wants to be part of something bigger than he or she can accomplish alone and who has the patience, ambition, and will to help the collective organization invest in that future. I call this group the human race, since one of the things that differentiates Homo sapiens, at least in scale, from other species is the ability to act collectively to build and develop a civilization. Note, however, that Type 4 could also be termed an ant community or beehive, where individuals slave for the benefit of the community, suppressing and subsuming their own identity within the whole. This interpretation is most likely to be applied, naturally, by those who do not place themselves in this category. I don't have a precise metric to measure the differing orientations described here, but I have found two proxy questions to be useful. On the issue of independence versus team play, I asked people whether, in general, they would prefer rewards in their own organization to be based, compared to the current situation, a little more on individual performance or a little more on joint rewards for joint performance. I then asked if people would like their firm to invest more, compared to the current arrangements, in its future, even if this meant that they as individuals would have to accept less current income in the form of salaries and current bonuses. These two imprecise questions tend to cause people to reflect on their true preferences. The underlying issue is not really about pay schemes, but phrasing the question this way tends to crystallize the issues for many people. I ask people in the group to indicate, anonymously if possible, which of these four preferences best describes their own personal preferences and where they would put their colleagues. At this point, you may wish to pause and guess what percentage of all your colleagues will place themselves by preference in the categories of mountain lion, wolf pack, spider or beaver, or human civilization. In the particular company where I first explored this model, all four groups were well represented, although only 10 to 20% put themselves in the group, I want to be part of something bigger than me that is working to build for the future. 30 to 40% put themselves in the solo short-term or mountain lion category, with approximately 20 to 30% each in the team play short-term, wolfpack, and solo builder, beaver categories. I don't know if the fact that only 10 to 20% of the key players wanting to be team play builders strikes you as low or matches your experience, but it leads to an interesting question. What do you think the chances are of melding people who describe themselves mostly as short-term solo operators into an institution that has a differentiated reputation? My own conclusion, then and now, is clear. An organization that has these proportions might succeed through individual entrepreneurial activities, but it would be quite literally incapable of having a company strategy. For example, no common reputation or differentiation could be achieved in the competition, either for clients or talent. Firm leaders who try to develop and implement company strategies would be literally wasting their time. Using this model in numerous firms has revealed diversity amongst people who had previously thought of themselves as loyal members of their firm. They may indeed be loyal, but their desires and preferences differ so much on the key dimensions that in many cases no strategy can accommodate the diversity of preferences among the members of the group. Although a prevalence of those choosing the team play building preference is not necessary, when a majority of the people really don't want to act collectively in building for the future, it's meaningless to develop plans as if they did. The mixture of preferences may place very severe limits on what an organization can achieve. While there may be some logic and merit in like-minded people banding together, whether they be mountain lions, wolves, spider beavers, or humans, an organization made up of an unmanaged mix of such types is unlikely to function well. Very few people or organizations have frank and open discussions about this surprising revelation. The preconditions for strategy are rarely exposed and examined, possibly because the implications of discovering this disparity of preferences can be very scary and disruptive. A group of people who all identify themselves as preferring to operate as independent short-term players can succeed in many businesses. See, for example, the discussion of hunters and farmers in my 1993 book, Managing the Professional Service Firm. Many businesses can be, and are, constructed around star players rewarded for their short-term results. Similarly, a wolf pack can achieve something that is called strategy and can align its recruiting, systems, and rewards around a strategy of collaborative, short-term actions, if that's what everyone wants. However, without a majority of key players committing to collaboration and investment in the future, it's unlikely that most of what is considered to be firm-level strategy can really be accomplished. Before discussing their plans together, firms need to discover whether their people really want to go on a journey, any journey, together. If you were to conduct this poll in your organization, what choices would you have if you found that you had a broad diversity of preferences? Option one would be to try to accommodate the differences. Is it possible to find different roles for people so that individualists and short-term players can be accommodated by playing specific roles in the organization without compromising the commitment and determination of the majority? This option would clearly be very desirable if it were practical. It would require the least disruption to the status quo. Manufacturing corporations have different activities, such as sales, production, or finance, that may require different attributes. So could other organizations, such as professional organizations, also accommodate different orientations? I believe that idea may work, but not by allowing people of different orientations to play the same role in the organization. There may be differences between the desirable characteristics of those in sales and those in production, but I doubt that much variety can be acceptable within one of those groups. If one salesperson or team is taking a collaborative building approach, is it acceptable for another to act in an independent short-term fashion? If the answer is yes, it would be hard to see what is meant by saying the organization has a strategy. The only way different species can live together peacefully in the real world is if they do not compete for the same resources. That means the wolf pack should be a completely separate department, preferably in a separate building, than the mountain lions, who have their own deal, privileges, responsibilities, and metrics. It's necessary to keep one group away from the others if they are to coexist. Is it possible to articulate to people that the team approach is in their individual best interest? Is it possible to persuade people that relying on and working with others will enable them to achieve their personal goals? Personally, I'm not sure I have much hope in this area. Is it really possible to get short-term individualists to do the right thing for the company's long-term best interest through persuasion or systems? Can they realistically set individual goals that further corporate goals? I am increasingly skeptical that this traditional managerial systems approach can be made to work. In my experience, it falls apart when we try to create an amalgam of many types of workers and then pretend that everyone is measured and rewarded on the same things, that everyone has the same performance standards, and that everyone plays the same role. Ultimately, it's too much to ask that excessive biodiversity be accommodated. I doubt that you can have a random equal mixture of all the types and make it work well. Option two, work to change people's orientation. The second choice for dealing with biodiversity is to try to affect people's orientations. One way to possibly accomplish this is to craft a sufficiently compelling vision for the future that even those who do not start off with an initial preference for team play or investment are willing to sign on to. The potential success of this option depends on one critical question. Are people's orientations relatively fixed, based on underlying personalities and preferences? Or can they change with time and become dependent upon specific circumstances? The answer is important. If people's orientation towards teamwork and time horizon is context-specific, in other words, dependent upon the particular team and strategies being proposed, then there is hope that some process of building commitment to a strategy can successfully forge collective action even from those initially unwilling. If, however, there's a relatively sizable fixed component in people's attitudes, then no strategic planning process can be successful. The choice will either be to abandon strategy or to separate from those who do not wish to enter upon the journey together, split up. My own hypothesis is that the fixed component in many people's personalities is relatively high. People really do differ on how they want to live their lives. Solo operators rarely develop a preference for team play, and people who want immediate gratification rarely develop the patience to sacrifice even a portion of today for an uncertain future, especially if they have to make that investment in conjunction with and be dependent on others. In this view, it's not the clarity or the glamour of the vision that affects people's lack of buy-in to collective future-oriented strategy, but people's willingness to participate in strategy at all. Another hypothesis that emerges from this is that it'll be hard, if not impossible, to reconcile differences through pay schemes. It'll be difficult to change working behaviors based on deep personal preferences, even through the clever construction of incentives. If this hypothesis is correct, people who do not conform to the basic orientation of the company should either be in or out of your organization, depending upon what the organization wants to accomplish. Companies, according to this point of view, must achieve a consistent, careful philosophy about the kind of people they bring in and the kind of people they keep. In a later chapter, we'll discuss the one firm firm. It's not easy, but it can be done. In spite of what I've argued above, the relatively fixed component of people's collaborative and future orientation is not completely determinative. It's encouraging, I found, to discover how many people will, in fact, choose to accept a well-articulated philosophy, even if it's not the one they might have chosen for themselves. If the firm is prepared to bring the issues of collaboration and future orientation to the surface, and through some open process, ask participants to commit themselves explicitly to a joint building future, then perhaps significant degrees of buy-in can be obtained. Options 3 or 4, split up or cover up. The consensus-building approach does not always work. Sometimes a firm which has been in existence for a long time can find it impossible to define a coherent strategy because there is no consensus on why the relevant people should stay together. Other than, of course, historical accident and mindless accretion, which is how many businesses seem to have grown. In a world in which many organizations have been put together with mergers, acquisitions, and extensive use of lateral hires, the underlying problem may grow in importance rather than diminish. In such a situation, which is remarkably common, there are really only two options: split up and issue avoidance. Splitting up is not necessarily a tragedy. If the people in an organization truly want to pursue different objectives and operate in different ways, it can be better for all concerned to confront the topic and, amicably, go separate ways rather than squabble or silently resent each other. Specifically, if people truly differ in their orientation and objectives, it may become necessary to ask those who are not prepared to commit collaboratively to leave the organization. This is the strategy advocated by Jim Collins in his book Good to Great, where he asserts that one of the primary keys to success is getting the right people on and off the bus, a conclusion that I share. This sounds tough, brutal, scary, and risky, and it is all of those things. Notice is the argument is not that doing this is unconditionally necessary. Rather, the argument is that it must be done if an organization is going to be capable of having a strategy, any strategy. The fourth alternative is by far the most common: avoidance of the issue, papering over the differences, ignoring the problem, or, worst and most common, complaining all the time that everybody wants different things and nothing gets done. Issue avoidance is, of course, the way fat smokers would deal with the problems. It's commonly observed that the biggest problem with developing strategy is implementation or execution. It may be that the problem is more profound, that the members of the organization have insufficient commitment to each other or their mutual future to execute any strategy. This concludes this chapter of my book, Strategy and the Fat Smoker. If you're interested in ordering a copy of the book in its printed form, visit Amazon.com or my website at davidmaester.com/store.